This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
My name is Rich Bradbury, with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. If you'd like to get in touch regarding our story today, it's all about kids ride-hailing apps, whether or not we could use them here in Malaysia, how you feel about that. We ask you to feedback via WhatsApp, 018-789-8899, on Twitter and Instagram. We're at BFM Radio. Do we have any more messages?
Yeah, we've got many tweets. I want to say zoo or like Sue or something, but like it's Z-U-E. Says, school bus services are the better option. The thing with parents ferrying their kids to school with their own rides, they want to make sure that kids do arrive and attend their classes. And a specialized ride-hailing app won't exactly convince helicopter parents to give this habit up anyway.
True.
Eliza says, I wouldn't trust my kids with anyone other than myself and immediate family, but I have been giving rides home to my kids' classmates. Mm. So kind of a point there on slight, you know, irony. And then, whoops, I clicked on a thing. Whoops, hold on. Let me scroll. There's scrolling happening. I apologize. My sister Brenda has also tweeted in, hello, who says, I'm a big believer in technology for good, so I believe this will be really useful for parents. However, as a non-parent, I'm not the biggest authority, and I can empathize with the fear of not knowing for sure where your kids are.
Mm-hmm.
Which
good
is
point.
Another good point.
Yep.
Yes.
When you were growing up, apart from you, Chris, because you just told us your whole taxi story.
Yeah.
when you were a younger boy, mm-hmm. you know, like last week, and you were going, and you were going to school, were friends, neighbors, would they take you to school sometimes? And
sometimes.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, my friends, my parents would know their parents and stuff, so they were friends, and then
right.
they would, like, ferry us to school and stuff. So we would, like, take turns. Sometimes my dad would take my other friends to school if they live nearby. So
yeah.
it was like, you know, favor for a favor kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then when it got easier, when I moved to secondary school, then I took the school bus, because it would literally come around my area. That's where it serviced, and then it would go straight to school. It was the quickest way. So so then it was just school bus all the way. When I got slightly older, I didn't want to take the school bus home because I wanted to hang with my friends, so I would just walk home.
Right.
Yeah.
Similar story for me. Public transportation and walking to and from school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's move on then to story number three, but do keep the feedback coming in, folks. Interesting points of view. This is all about how you should stop freaking out about robots.
I mean, it is Tech Thursday, right? So
right.
we gotta do a techie story, and basically everyone one's terrified of automation, obviously. The most widely held fear, and one that taps into our earliest fears about industrialization, is of mass employment, because the robots are going to come take all the jobs, is the idea, right? But it turns out that maybe automation might be better for us than we think. And there are kind of broadly three reasons to be cheerful about the march of the robots. So the first point is that automation actually drives growth. Since the Industrial Revolution, the automation of human labor has run hand in hand with productivity gains, economic growth, and an increase in the number of jobs and also prosperity. It is, in fact, productivity growth that largely accounts for why most of us are six times better off than our great-grandparents. Economists have a name for the intuitive but mistaken idea that there's a certain amount of work to do in an economy, and that if productivity increases, there'll be fewer jobs to go around. And there are, of course, occupations that have fared less well in the face of technology, but the general pattern is that machines always take over mundane tasks, and humans then move on to do more sophisticated and often more meaningful work that machines actually can't do yet. And the net effect in a buoyant economy is actually job growth. So that's
okay,
reason number one.
That's reason number one, yeah.
Yes. Reason number two is that automation work makes work more rewarding. So the general assumption is that if the robot doesn't replace you, it will de-skill you. But it turns out that actually, again, going back to the idea that machines take on simple tasks, humans can then move on to more complex and more meaningful work as well. And the last point is overestimation of machines underrating humans. So this is an interesting example. Toyota has actually robots doing less than 8% of the work on the factory floor, and that ratio hasn't changed in 15 years. So when asked why, the president of Toyota Motor Manufacturing in Kentucky replied that machines are good for repetitive things, but they can't improve their own efficiency or the quality of their work. Only people can.
Mm.
So automation isn't as easy as many assume, and pessimists tend to overestimate the extent to which humans can be replaced and how fast it will happen. Basically, you know, there is always going to be something for humans to do because machines can't self-improve.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago on Matt Splained, very similar things. And one of the things that we were talking about is how robots and automation were being used in things like medicine, particularly in the operating theater and stuff like that. For one, for procedures that normally a human hand can't do because they are too fine and too you need to be much more accurate than the human hand can do. Stuff like that is what worries me when it comes to you know, automation and robots.
Are we talking about the grape?
I think it was the grape. I mean, I think it's brilliant that something like that can happen and wonderful and whatever. But when you know something can be that accurate and that precise,
yeah,
you know, you don't need a human for that.
But I guess it is still being controlled by a human, isn't it?
To a degree, yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah. I mean,
for a while.
For a while, you know, at least for now, with in situations like that, those machines are still tools that need to be controlled by humans who know what to operate on, you know, because you can patch up a grape all you want, but it won't, you know, teach you how to do brain surgery, I guess.
For all I know, Arvin welcomes our robot overlords, right?
Sure. If they're going to be overlords, yeah.
I pledge my allegiance. We all have to say
yes. Yeah, we have to say yes.
Yeah.
Because computers are all around us.
Computer says no.
Yeah, no.
No.
Yeah. No, but also there was that case, I think, that happened last month where someone who had heart surgery, I think he unfortunately, he died on the table because it was being done by a robot. And they actually went back and did like their research and found out that if it was done by a human surgeon, he wouldn't have died.
Oh.
Yeah, so I think the robot, because it's so programmed to do only certain things, it didn't notice that he had like an anomaly with his body.
Right.
And if there was like a human surgeon there, he would have been able to look at it and go, no, there's something wrong here. We cannot cut into this section or that section or whatever. So he, unfortunately, that happened. So they went back and they sort of like revised their, you know, their rules and, you know, if there should be someone always overseeing these procedures.
Right. But this discussion we've had from varying different angles, haven't we? You know, and about how humans will always find something to do and we'll be better off, we'll be doing something that feels a bit more wholesome and one thing or other. It's just going to make us lazy though in the long run, is it not?
Maybe. But no, I think then we'll just figure out how to be more creative, which is harder to do, I think. There's this video, if you go on YouTube and then you look up what kids in 1963 or 67 or something like that, they were like predicting like a whole bunch of kids. And for some reason, kids back then were so intelligent. I don't know how. They were like 10 or 12, but then the way they spoke was like someone in his mid-30s. No, like honestly, so you just go look it up. It's in black and white. A bunch of kids, they predict what the year 2000 would be like. And they speak of automation. And they're like, oh, everything will be automated. No robots would have taken over. There must be like nuclear war or something because that was the climate back then. But we've been talking about automation for so, so long. And we're still not at that point yet, I think.
All right. We're going to take a short break, folks. When we come back, we are giving you our final story of the day. How Hong Kong wants to build a $60 billion city in the sea. Of course they do. Don't go anywhere. You listen to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.